Ars Electronica 2008. A new cultural economy.
Okay, so I know that my colleague Georgia was here yesterday and she talked about Global Voices. Probably a lot of you heard her speak about it. She actually, she stole my presentation. Can you believe it? I was so pissed. So now I had to redo my presentation, and I was thinking, how am I possibly going to get back at her? Fortunately, she's in South Africa now, where she can't defend herself. Georgia actually, besides technically being my boss, she's also a very dear friend of mine. And that's one of the greatest parts about Global Voices, is that just through blogs and through groups like sites like Flickr, YouTube, people all over the world, wherever they are, they can become your friends instantly. There's a problem with it too, though, which is that I'm sure as you all know, the more time that you spend with friends, the more blackmail and embarrassing photos that they acquire of you. Georgia has lots of embarrassing photos of me and videos. We tend to drink lots of mojitos together. And so every time that I see her present, she never shows me her slides, and every time I see her present, it's always just anxiety-ridden for me because I'm like, oh God, what is she gonna show? She was very kind to me yesterday. She didn't show anything that was too bad. So I guess it'd be very rude and unethical if I were to show something, any kind of bad photo of Georgia. Fortunately, that's exactly how I am. This is Georgia eating a doubles, which is a confusing word. It's a singular word, a doubles. And if you don't know what a doubles is, you're probably not a frequent reader of Global Voices. A doubles is a snack in Trinidad and Tobago. Most people have it for breakfast, but you can also have it for dinner, late night snack. One thing that you find reading Global Voices is that every country has a lot of similarities. There are also a lot of differences, obviously. But just about every single country has its street snack. You know, you go out for a few beers, it's time to go home, but you want something in the stomach because it'll make you feel better in the morning. And in Trinidad and Tobago, that thing is a doubles. I still haven't figured out what the plural is. I think it's either doubles is or quadruples. This is a doubles vendor in Port of Spain. You can see it's a very popular snack. One thing that a lot of people don't know about Trinidad and Tobago is that there are actually just as many citizens there of East Indian ethnicity as of African ancestry. And there's a small white population too. You can get to know Trinidad and Tobago a lot better if you read Global Voices. So just to sum it up really quickly, what I would recommend doing if you didn't see George's presentation yesterday and you want to know more about what Global Voices is and how it operates is to go to globalvoicesonline.org/about and read it. It's basically just an aggregator of what the world's talking about. I think there's something like 500 million blogs right now, just a ridiculous amount. So it's scary to open your computer, you know, because there's just this torrent of information that's coming at us. And now, there are no boundaries. I mean, we can be friends with, we can talk to anybody. I bet probably 25% of this room probably has a blog. And I could easily just leave a comment, get to know you better. We could become best friends within a year. But we tend to just stick to our local neighborhoods. And our reading habits online tend to be pretty close to our lives offline. So even though people are so excited about the internet being this open space, without borders, without geography, there's no distance between neighbors anymore, the reality is we still kind of perpetuate our same offline behavior online. Here's an example of just a very small post. This is just a very brief two-sentence link to a Jamaican blogger, Francis Wade, who, when was this posted? August 12th. So this was just a little bit ago. This was like 3 weeks ago. He was visiting Trinidad, and so the Jamaican blogger says, you know, I'll take a video of a doubles vendor. And so you can click on the link. You get to Francis's blog. Here he is describing what a doubles vendor is in Trinidad. He makes the comparison. In Jamaica, it's called a patty. I prefer the doubles myself. It's a little spicier. And then he puts a video up. Now, speaking of artists, I think that this guy here is a true artist.
I'm going to go.
he's amazing, right? It's like he's not even thinking about anything. He's just left and right. I would never be able to do that, ever. We're very, very happy to be receiving this award because even though Global Voices is frequently congratulated about the content that we produce, this is the first time that we've been recognized for the community behind the content. And I think that's the real story for me, because if you've ever tried making a website and maintaining that website with just one other person or two other people, you know how difficult that can be. One person wants pink, the other person wants blue. There are all these different disagreements about design, about content, about what you should be focusing on, about how long the article should be, about whether you should use photographs or not, movies. All of these things come into play. Now imagine having that discussion with 500 people, and imagine them speaking 30 different languages and having all sorts of different cultural backgrounds, religious backgrounds, based in all different time zones, which frequently means that I have online IRC meetings at 2 o'clock in the morning. We're based all over the place. Global Voices, I think all three of these communities grew organically. It's not like we had this great plan. Actually, there was a great plan, which I'll get into, but it's not how it went as planned. What happens is you see a need, which is true with all three, and from there a community evolves around that need, and great ideas happen from different members of the community. And whatever's the best idea usually gets chosen. So here's some of the rhetoric that started when we were first thinking about Global Voices. This was back in 2004. You might know this map. This map comes from Samuel Huntington's book, The Clash of Civilizations. It gets cited all the time in popular culture and academic articles. And this theory of Samuel Huntington is that after the Cold War, after there's really no longer communism in the world, then the main source of conflict isn't going to be political ideology, it's going to be religious and cultural differences. And so this map shows some of those fault lines where Huntington predicted that there would be lots of cultural clashes or clashes of civilizations in the coming years after the post-Cold War era. He wrote this in 1996. It really got a lot of attention around 1999 when Francis Fukuyama wrote The End of Man. And then let's take a look what happens since it was published. There was the 1996 to 1999 Yugoslav wars, the second Chechen war, the September 11th attacks on U.S., the U.S. invasion on Afghanistan, the second Palestinian Intifada, the Bali bombings, the Iraq war, the Darfur conflict, the Madrid train bombings, the London bombings, the Mohammed cartoon crisis, the Israel-Lebanon conflict, and most recently, the Chinese Olympic torch protests. That's a crazy decade, right? We've been through a lot recently. And so looking back at Huntington's thesis, it looks like he got at least a little bit right. This is another chart from the book. Now, the thick lines between what Huntington calls these different civilizations is what he sees as more conflict. So there's a lot of conflict between Western civilization and Islamic civilization, for example. Same with Western and Chinese, and Orthodox and Japanese. And so what we got to thinking is, well, what if these dark lines, deep, bold lines of conflict were deep, bold lines of communication? This is obviously kind of idealistic, utopianist thought. But, you know, for example, this Indonesian protester, he's protesting the visit of George Bush, and he has an Osama bin Laden t-shirt on. What if we got him kind of talking about his daily life, his wife, what he likes to eat, his favorite type of music? What if we got him talking with these guys? These guys are Australians. One day they decided to get really drunk and beat up a Lebanese community in Cronulla Beach in Australia. There were riots. And, you know, what are these guys? What's their life like? What type of music do they like? And what do they do in the afternoon? And what if we could see each other as more than just our ethnicity or our so-called civilization or our religion, and we could actually get to know one by one the people behind them? That's the idealism. There's something else that's going on during this whole time. Let's say this is around 2000 to 2004. There's an exponential increase of blogs worldwide. You can see it just went nuts. It slowed down a little bit, but for the first 6 or 7 years of the blogosphere, it was doubling every single year, the number of blogs. And it wasn't just blogs in the United States or in Europe. It was blogs all over the world. In fact, English is no longer the dominant language of the conversational web. Now Japanese is, which took Japanese bloggers by surprise. There's an excellent article on Global Voices which translates from Japanese to English, Japanese bloggers' reactions to them being, well, having the largest blogosphere in the entire world. There's something else that's going on during this period of 2000 to 2004. It's still going on, actually. Media attention. This looks at the major international media outlets. It's a map actually by Global Voices co-founder Ethan Zuckerman, and it's updated by a bunch of scripts. It uses Technorati's, what they say are the most established media outlets online, and looks at where they focus their attention. You can see there's a lot of focus on North America. Argentina and Chile get some, but the rest of Latin America really doesn't get much at all. Africa hardly gets any attention, except for South Africa, a little bit in Zimbabwe right now because of what's going on. Australia gets a good chunk. Europe gets a great amount of attention. And India and China are now getting more and more attention in the online media. But you can see there's a huge imbalance of who gets mentioned and who doesn't get mentioned in traditional media, in the old way that we found information about the rest of the world. And there's also this trend, which is still going on right now, of the disappearing foreign bureau and the disappearing foreign correspondent. So the newspapers that we read used to pay 20 people, 30 people to go live around the world and report about the rest of the world. Now newspapers don't know how to make money. Actually, none of us know how to make money anymore. And so they're having to cut back. And where they're cutting back is on their international reporting, because it doesn't make a lot of money, and yet it costs a lot of money to send for the travel expenses. Gas is going up a lot now. So Global Voices' tagline is, "The world is talking, are you listening?" Which I think might be a little bit far-reaching, because not the entire world is talking, for example. And even if all 6 billion people in the world were talking, we wouldn't be able to feature all 6 billion people on Global Voices every day. So it's a select portion of what the world is talking about. And when you think about all of these blogs, all of this stuff happening, the entire world, all of these cities that we never even knew existed, except the world just keeps getting smaller and smaller, and we need to know that they exist now, who do you want to guide you around this conversational web online? I would highly recommend these people. These are just a portion of the authors who read hundreds and hundreds of blogs every day, know what's going on in the blogospheres where they live, live in the countries where they're reporting from, and share some of the most interesting conversations with us. Just to pick out a few of them, this is Hanako Tokita and Chris Salzberg. They're a couple. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that, but I just did. Chris is like the tallest guy I've ever met in my life. Hanako's probably about 5'4". I know I should be using meters. I'm sorry, it's a bad American habit. Chris is like 3 meters tall, 9 feet, 10 feet. He's mammoth. It's unbelievable. And they are our bridge into the Japanese blogosphere. So if I was good at using Photoshop and all of these things, I could have different spheres. And you have these amazing conversations, very dynamic, heated debates that are going on in the Japanese blogosphere, in the Chinese blogosphere, in the American blogosphere, in the Austrian blogosphere. But they're largely happening independent from each other. And so even though Austrian bloggers surely talked about China during the Chinese Olympics, they didn't talk with Chinese. There was no communication going between them, unless, of course, you're daily Global Voices readers, which you all should be. So on July 8th, of 2008, a Japanese blogger by the name of Osamu Higuchi wrote a blog post as an open letter to Google about their map, about their street view. Did anybody read this blog post? All right. I guess you guys don't follow a lot of Japanese language blogs. I don't either. I wasn't able to. But thankfully, Chris and Hanako, working together, they put an article on Global Voices, which gave a lot of context to Google, to the fact that Google has a great reputation in Japan right now, that people trust Google a lot, that the media tends not to question anything that Google does because there's kind of this reverence for Google in Japan. So we need that context before we can get straight into the translated post. Also, look where the red is there. You can see that this post is not only translated from Japanese into English, but then from English into French, Chinese, and Italian. And it gives an amazing, insightful description of why Google Street View, which did have some controversy in the United States when it came out, but why it's different in Japan. For one thing, we have different attitudes towards privacy and towards what we think of as our front yard, So the front yard in Austria and in the United States is kind of, it's private, but it's this private public space. You know, we're showing it to the rest of the world. People can peek in and look at our garden, no problem. In Japan, that's very different. Your porch, your front yard, your space around your house, that's all very private. And you're not, when you walk around Japan, no one ever takes pictures of anyone's gardens. And in fact, this guy is saying, if you were Japanese and you're taking pictures of people's houses, they're going to get very upset, and the police are probably going to come in and say, hey, what are you doing? So he talks about all this in the original article. You can see that also we leave the Japanese text up there and then do the English translation. So if anyone wants to post a comment and say, you know, I don't quite agree with this way, the way that you translated this sentence, they can, and it becomes a much more transparent process. There were an amazing amount of comments that came on this post, and one of them came from an architect who has worked both in Japan and in Australia, I believe. Maybe it was in the U.S. And he makes a point that in the United States, when people build houses, usually there are steps that go up to these houses, and the porch of the house is more elevated. So when Google has their vans where they put the cameras on top of the van and they drive around the streets and they take tons of pictures, and that's how Google Street View works. I'll show you some pictures. In the United States, you're not really seeing into people's windows. You're just kind of seeing their front doors, the steps leading up to their houses. But you take those same vans and you drive them around the streets of Japan, and all of a sudden you're staring inside of people's houses, inside their windows. You can see what people are doing inside of their homes. So it's a very interesting way to say that, you know, you can't just apply the same technologies to all different cultures and all different countries because it's different. Global Voices is a central node. I would say it's the central node right now in the international conversational web that is linking all of these different spheres of conversation so they can interact with one another. But we're just one part of this new media ecology. Slashdot is undoubtedly another major part. Slashdot is a huge community of users. You can see Chris's post was linked to on Slashdot, which had a huge amount of traffic on our site, and then 474 people commented on the post. And not only did these comments talk about Google Street View, but they talked about the cultural differences of privacy of the West and Japan. They argued if there are cultural differences. It argued about liberals versus conservatives, of who says that there are cultural differences between Japan and who tries to say, no, we're all just the same people, that really doesn't happen. It was a fascinating conversation. One person, this guy named Adam Lesnick, uses his Google Reader and shares the post on FriendFeed, and all of a sudden, hundreds and hundreds of Twitter users, bloggers, Flickr users, commenters are adding what they want to say. Robert Scoble is a very popular blogger in the United States and all over the world. He adds in too, you know, is there cultural differences? Should Google ask a country's blogosphere before they apply the same technology to another country? There was so much conversation about this in the English language blogosphere that then Japanese bloggers started translating those comments back into Japanese. So this is a blogger, Taku Nakajima, who translates all of this commentary happening on FriendFeed and Slashdot back into Japanese. Then there's a vibrant conversation in the Japanese blogosphere of, did they interpret us right? What do they think? And so this is all going on, which of course, Chris is going to summarize and translate back into English. This is an example of how Global Voices works. This is an example of how the global conversation works and can work. It obviously requires a lot of effort on the part of volunteer translators, people just reading huge amounts of blogs to find out what are the most interesting arguments. And now I'll reward you with some pictures. This is a chest massage happening in Yokohama. This is on Google Maps. Obviously, a lot of people were pretty upset about two young high schoolers kind of getting touchy-feely in the streets. This is still up there, by the way. You can click on a link. I'm not going to put it up, but it's still up on Google Maps. Here's a couple entering a love hotel, which is kind of a, I guess I don't have to explain what a love hotel is. And maybe the most poignant kind of example of cultural difference between the West and Japan is that now there's this trend that's happening in the United States that when people see a Google van go by with the cameras, some women, this young lady who is on May Street in Chicago, she shows them her Googles, is what they call it. Fortunately, she didn't quite show them her Googles in this picture, so I'm able to put it up. But we might see more and more of this all around the world. Be prepared for the Google van. We also, on Global Voices, we do a lot of interviews with bloggers, with photo bloggers from all over the world. So you can get to know the people behind the stories. This is an interview that Jennifer Bray, she's interesting. She's American. She has a lot of experience in Africa. She travels to Africa probably about 6 months of the year, but she's based in Beijing. She's especially interested in the relationship between African bloggers and Chinese bloggers. Here you can see an interview that she did with Cedric Kalonji. This is his identity card from the Republic of Zaire. Obviously now it's the Democratic Republic of Congo. Cedric is based in Kinshasa. And you can see this post also was translated into French, Portuguese, Italian, Malagasy, which is the language of Madagascar, Spanish, and Japanese. And one of the things that Jennifer says is, what I really liked about these photographs is that whereas international media images of Congo tend to depict disaster or the strange and exotic, Kalonji's photographs are the ordinary, the everyday life in Africa the outside world does not often see. So I decided to ask Kalonji about his photographs, and he graciously agreed. So, you know, she does this interview. It's a fascinating interview. I highly recommend it. This is one of his photographs. This young guy, the guy in the kind of salmon, the red-colored shirt who's sitting down, he was arrested for stealing an arm's length of electric cable. I think it was Ethernet cable, probably. The person in the white tank top was also arrested for trying to purchase that stolen cable from him. And you can see a big crowd was surrounded around there. Here is a part, this is in Binza Osone in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where erosion is a major problem and is claiming more and more houses every month. Let's see, when was this? November of last year, we had this huge bump of traffic. All of a sudden we were looking at our stats and trying to see who was reading us and how many people were reading us. And in November, it was just this gigantic spike. And so we said, well, what's going on? It's probably the Middle East peace talks in Annapolis. That's always a big topic, and probably a lot of people were linking to that. But no, that wasn't it. We looked at our stats a little bit closer, and we were like, okay, it must be emergency rule in Pakistan. This is when emergency rule happened in Pakistan. And it turned out that this huge bump in traffic was actually about ants, which is very strange, and it's about ants in China. The Tiangxi Group, it was a big scandal. They make basically herbal, I guess ants aren't herbal, are they? What would you call that? Insectal? Viagra. They say it's an aphrodisiac to eat ants. And so what they did, it was a huge business, and what they did is they made ant farming packages, these boxes. And they said, okay, here's what you do. You buy this ant farming package for, let's say, $20. I don't know how much it was. And then you have an ant farm, and you have lots and lots and lots of ants, and then we're going to buy those ants off of you in about a couple years. You know, don't worry about it. This is going to be huge. Everyone who's ever won an erection for more than 10 minutes is going to start eating ants, obviously. So it didn't turn out so great. It turned out that what they did is actually put the active ingredients of Viagra into the ants, and then they tried to sell it abroad, and most of the government said, no way, you can't do that. And so they went bankrupt. And people invested their life savings thinking they're going to get crazy rich being ant Viagra sellers. Huge protests erupted all over China about this. And let me go back real quick. You can see here the November 22nd update. China, the last thing that they want are huge protests, right? If you have a country of 1.5 billion people, you don't want a lot of protests. That's nightmare. You just want people kind of going on with their daily lives and not getting too upset. And so they do everything that they can to kind of remove these images. They don't want people to see that other people can organize and try to make a difference. Here's an example of one of the blog posts that was translated. He talks about a sister who lost her entire life savings. Here's a woman crying at one of the protests because, all of her money is gone because she trusted these people. Here are the ant farmers versus the Chinese police. Not quite a match for the Chinese police, but obviously, and it's the photograph that really can make a huge difference because it's showing that not everything is going great, which is really a revolutionary thing in China. 130 responses to it, and every single one, most of these responses, these comments, were done by other Chinese bloggers. And yet, all of them are translated to English, thanks to the volunteer translation team that we have on Global Voices. So you can see what every single person has to say. A lot of people are just kind of saying, I know someone who lost everything to this, and it was a very big deal in China, and it's a story that you just did not hear reading your local newspaper. I think I'm going over time. How are we? 2 more minutes, okay. I'm gonna skip this. Skip. Aren't these cool? These are flying saucer houses in Taiwan. I totally want one of these things. Unfortunately, they're being torn down for a seaside resort. And Global Voices is not only a great resource to learn about how the world, how it is today, it's gonna be a fantastic resource for people in the future, for historians looking back at what we lost. There are so many things in the past, like these flying saucer houses, that we lost that we don't even know about. Now that there's a great record of what they were, photographs of them, and how people felt when they were being torn down. Here's a Taiwanese blogger saying, "It's a pity we tear down these houses." This is Old Damascus, which is being destroyed. That's a bulldozer kind of going through Old Damascus. There's a huge movement to try to stop it. It's not going to happen, unfortunately. The developers kind of always win in these cases. But we have this very valuable record of how people feel about it. And not only is that valuable record available to Syrians and Arabic speakers, but it's also available to anyone who speaks English or Bengali, Macedonian, Albanian, French, Spanish, Portuguese, Japanese, and Chinese. So it's really, you know, a global record. This is Luanda's Kinatsitsi Market, which was one of the very first cases where modern architecture wasn't just colonial architecture. This is kind of a new thing. Let's be modern, and yet let's create a building that is adapted for our own climate. So it was called tropical architecture, and it is now gone. Here's how people feel about it. Angolan bloggers writing in Portuguese, being translated into English. And on this Angolan blog, Angola has about 2% internet penetration, and yet 62 responses came. So it was very powerful. Rising Voices, Georgia got into yesterday. It's the project that I direct. And I'm just going to end it on this last video, I guess, which means I'm going to have to skip out on the video about the heavy metal scene in Iran, which is fascinating. I hope that you go to the website, to rising.globalvoicesonline.org, and check it out, because there's a vibrant heavy metal scene, and there's this classic, wonderful moment where these heavy metal, you know, they're teenagers, they're probably about 18, 19, and they're kind of rocking out, and then their downstairs neighbor comes, and he's about 50 years old, and he says, "You guys, you got to quiet down." And that's something that happens in every neighborhood all over the world. But here is just a trailer that this group put together. This is a group of young film students in Iran who didn't even know that they could distribute their movies online. So a lot of this, we do outreach work to try to say, this global conversation that's happening, every single person in this room can take part in it. Anyone can get involved. All you have to do is set up a blog and start linking. And in Iran, actually, YouTube is blocked, but there are a lot of other tools that people can use. And so here is, it's a very short 1-minute video.